That cue point wasn't where I thought it was. Whoops.
Close enough.
Anyways, so yeah, show's a little late. Technical issues. Get that all sorted. This is Pure Decking for June the 21st, 1982. This is the show about stuff that interests me. I'm Morps, and tonight, after a hell of a lot of dicking around to get everything going, we've got Big Brother, BSV, Sard, and Suave. Hey, guys.
Hey, how's it going?
Hello. Hello.
Just fair warning, we're probably going to be a short show today, a little light on stories, and the Digital Dojo section's almost a cop-out. So, and that's because I haven't actually had time to work much on the show notes like I usually do, because work was a little crazy. But this weekend, I'm actually going up to do the zombie run. Run for
that
your lives.
Should be fun as hell. I'm jealous.
Yeah. I'm hoping
come
so.
Back.
I mean,
not making any sense. We know to shoot you. Got it.
On the next episode of Digital Dojo, it'll be brains, brains, yeah. Brains.
Just Morps moaning for an hour.
Although, technically, if a zombie could get a show up and running, he's a very intelligent one.
Well, remember, you gotta remember in Ramirez Zombies or whatever, they retain, you know, like basic motor skills or whatever that they did over and over and over again. So Morps has probably done this enough times. Even as a zombie, I bet you he could pull it off.
That's what I'd be doing as a zombie.
But just make a zombie hacker.
You just hear me headbutting the keyboard like a lot.
Yeah.
I've got a shock mount. I don't know how well that would actually aim through on the... Anyways, but yeah, I'm actually paying money to go have people dress up like zombies and chase me, so that's interesting.
sounds like a fun time.
It is. It looks like it's going to be a blast. I'm going up there with Laser Saturday, so that'll be
awesome.
That's actually took most of my planning time this week, and it's I just haven't had time to sit down and sort everything else out. So, light show this week. So, anyways. Let's see though. First thing we got up in current events is a story from CNET, and I've pretty much picked this story just to piss off Big Brother, pretty much.
Thank you.
So, U.S. and Canadian law enforcement agencies are warning that with a historic switch to the next generation internet protocol called IPv6, may imperil investigations, making it more difficult to trace who's using which electronic address. FBI, Drug Enforcement Administration, and the Royal Canadian Mounted Police officials have told industry representatives that IPv6 traceability is necessary to identify people suspected of crimes. The FBI has even suggested that a new law may be necessary if the private sector doesn't do enough voluntarily. Investigations stem from kidnappings, the September 11 terrorist attacks, and the... Why the hell are you bringing up 9/11?
Because America! 9-11, 9-11, 9-11.
My Tob Worm have all involved tracing previous... What the hell did 9-11 have to do with tracing IPv4 addresses?
And pretty much they bring up kids and 9-11.
I mean, okay, I'm not one of those truthers. I don't go nuts on 9-11 like a lot of people do, but this is just silly. There's no reason to bring that up. Bureau
yeah,
said
but it makes people afraid, so they will do what you tell them to do.
It's called fear mongering.
And if you vote against a bill that has that in it, well, you're just un-American.
Yeah.
The Bureau says it needs the same level of traceability for IPv6, which got a boost in popularity last week thanks to World IPv6 Day. We're looking at a problem that's about to occur. John Curran, president of the American Registry for Internet Numbers, ARIN, a nonprofit group that allocates blocks of IPv4 and IPv6 addresses in North America, and the Caribbean told CNET. It occurs as service providers start to roll out V6. This IPv6-related effort comes as the FBI is redoubling its efforts to combat what it calls the going dark problem, meaning that its surveillance capabilities may diminish as technology advances. Boo fucking who. Go do your job.
We have to do our job.
It's called investigative work, and as somebody who's done computer forensics, just because you can't monitor the line doesn't mean there's not shit you can't do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, okay, you can't monitor the line. Great, go capture one of the endpoints. It's like, oh, we know they're on the server. Great, go take over that server and watch them from there. It's not that fucking hard.
Although the line earlier, I do like, we may have to make new laws. Because the private sector, if it doesn't do enough voluntarily.
That's actually common practice. That's why the ISPs agreed to the six strike rule, is because the FCC was threatening to make rules if they didn't. So the ISPs entered a private agreement with the RIAA and MPAA.
That's not the purpose of a law!
Yeah, your point. Our government hasn't been doing its purpose for, what, since FDR, I think? Maybe back a little farther than that.
Nobody knows what they're doing. But at least what they're supposed to do.
Privacy is a human right, not a thing that you can take away.
Yeah. Anyways, just to cap off the story here, law enforcement's difficulty with IPv6 traceability has little to do with the underlying technology and a lot to do with the foils of human bookkeeping. This slide, labeled unclassified from FBI presentation, says that tracing IP addresses through who has been part of investigations stemming from kidnappings, said blah, 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 blah. Basically, because they can't do whois lookups on IPv6 very easily right now, they're worried that it's going to be impossible to track down who owns an IPv6 address.
That's retarded. Who actually puts real information on their whois? That's retarded.
Well, your ISP does. It's you can do the whois on an ISP and figure out who the ISP is, and then you can subpoena the ISP.
What I want to know is why whois is so difficult with the IPv6? Is it just because there's so many more numbers? Or
yeah, it's a much larger environment. There's been a lot of people just kind of doling them out, trying to get people to use them, and they haven't done accurate. The record keeping is not nearly as accurate as what it is for IPv4 right now.
Mm.
So, you know, and because of the just the sheer amount of numbers, you know, there's not a whois database or anything like it for IPv6 right now. I'm sure we'll get one eventually. It's just they're getting all pissy because, you know, they can't do a whois lookup and then figure out who owns an address and go from there. But right. I mean, there's a lot you can do outside of tracing IPs if you need to track somebody down. They actually, and my point on that is, a couple months back they actually busted some guys who were selling drugs online, and they were going, you know, they were running a site on Tor.
Okay.
Well, with Tor, you have even less traceability than you do with IPv6, but they still managed to catch them because they followed the financials.
Right.
You know, they went back and did actual police work.
But, like, with Tor, isn't there only, like, something like, what is it, 3,000 exit nodes?
Yeah, it's something like that. But, I mean, they didn't even bother trying to track them through Tor. They just you know, did the old-fashioned trick of, you know, buying some stuff online and tracking the money, yeah.
Okay.
But so, this also reminds me of, you know, the internet will find a way. I just looked through the show notes, and I see you don't have the story about, I guess it was somewhere in England High Council Court or whatever, blocked access to the Pirate Bay. Well,
we've done that a couple of times, yeah.
Okay, yeah, I just saw that on the other slash out the other day. They've already found a way
around.
Within a
matter of minutes. Like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's just, they don't have it right now. It will take them a little while to get it established and get some, you know, the right software in place or whatever. But there's where there's a will, there's a way. They'll always find a way around it.
Well, do you remember the theme I had going for with a lot of the news stories for a long time of just law enforcement going, it's too hard. Pass a law, make it easy, so we don't have to work.
Exactly.
So,
and from at least from what I understand of the state, they're complaining mainly, well, it's not that it's harder to track, it's just they don't have the database set up.
Yeah, so it's new. I mean, basically what that is they're putting out this statement now saying, well, if you're going to go to IPv6, you better set up our databases so we can track you. Or we're going to agree to law. That's essentially what they're doing. Mm-hmm. They're trying to make sure that, you know, you get the same kind of who is lookup functionality and stuff like that that they're using in the new protocol, and it just hasn't been built yet. So they're just trying to make a point of, oh, well, you better build that.
So,
anyways, next, let's move on here. This one, you know, if you thought that one made your brain hurt, wait for this one. It's from daily.com. Animation filmmaker M. Strange made it a point to make every minute of his new film 100% original. From the visuals and the dialogue to the composer Indica's accompanying soundtrack, this San Jose, California filmmaker took the necessary precautions that Heartstrings Marionette was coming directly and exclusively from his own devices. But when he posted the film on YouTube as part of a Try Before You Buy campaign, he received a letter from the video sharing site that told him his movie may contain content that was owned by another company, BFM Digital, a music publishing company that licenses content for over 500 different record labels. Strange knew that something was askew, since YouTube hadn't initially provided him with an explanation as to what its content ID system detected as BFM Digital's. He sent an appeal notice and heard back a few hours later. It was the wind. BFM Digital claims they owned the Sound of Wind.
My brain, it bleeds.
Strange had gone to Japan and recorded a series of wind samples that he used in the movie, but Content ID claimed that he hadn't. That's what forced the flag up. By then, Strange's story had already made its way into Hacker News, where users began to discuss and direct YouTube's Content ID foils. He learned that his case wasn't the first. BFM Digital had been involved in content ownership disputes exactly like this many times before. I think we talked about one where somebody got claimed for birds chirping in the background of their video. I think this was the same company. The company, one Hacker News commenter alleged, posted a catalog of royalty-free public domain compositions and sound effects into its archive. Things like birds chirping and ocean breaks. Every time YouTube's automated content ID system scans a sound effect that registers with BFM archives, YouTube issues a letter to the video's poster saying BFM owns the content and holds the option to run advertisements. So what this is BFM has uploaded all kinds of common sounds, so they essentially get to run their ads at no cost to them on content that other people make.
Wow.
Now, BFM doesn't, you know, they've got in here BFM waved the flag. It's company policy to let any claim on sound effects expire, since the company is aware of its abundant public domain catalog. But Strange has already pulled the video off YouTube because of it. But,
why would you post anything on YouTube?
Well, lots of people do. It's where the audience is. But
well, no, because of this or shit like this that's going on.
Well, you know, we've been talking about taking Digital Dojo and turning it into a video segment and doing screen capture because we're getting at the limit of what we can do with audio. And I don't think I'll be able to post it on YouTube just because we might get a bird chirping in the background. I mean, RU's got birds in Australia, so we've heard them on his calls before.
No, like what we should
somebody
do,
makes
though,
a creaking noise.
We should just start doing the same thing that they're doing, you know?
Claim like, all sounds?
Yeah.
Well, you have to have a contract with Google to be able to get into the content ownership system.
Yes.
And apparently that's like stupid expensive.
Okay.
That's why you only see certain companies doing it. But yeah, this is exactly what we were worried about when they first talked about installing this kind of content system, that you would just have companies claiming silence or, you know, anything. I mean, they are literally claiming copyright on everything.
The wind.
Yeah, the wind.
Now, like, for most, like, okay, so most people, they're just going to take down their video and that's going to be the end of it. You could be like, well, actually, no, I'm going to fight this. And there's not a court in the world that would actually uphold any sort of copyright claims
for the wind. And in the story, they even say that this BFM waves the flag. I mean, it doesn't. They don't contest it. If you say no, you don't own copyright on my video, they don't contest it. It's just how many people don't care. Yeah. How many people throw up their videos and just either don't know or they get the letter and think there's nothing they can do about it. So they just accept it, and this company gets all kinds of free advertising.
Instead of getting all frustrated about this company getting free advertising, people should take this as a learning experience and be like, hey, you should actually stand up for yourself and not just accept this bullshit. Because, like, yeah, no, this is a bad system, and, you know, it's really shitty. But you shouldn't just, like, bend over and take it. You know, you just stand up to it, and it's going to go away.
Oh, YouTube should realize they're freaking scamming them.
Yeah. Well, no, but they like money.
Well, I think what's going to happen is you're going to see more and more independent people moving away from YouTube and sites like LiveLeak and Vimeo.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's going to spread out away from YouTube, and they're not going to be... Sort of like, you know, when Napster went down, everybody started going to their own little individual systems, and it got harder and harder to control it. So,
the problem with that, though, is YouTube is where the viewers are at. Like, you know, a video on, if you throw a video on, like, let's say Vimeo, you're going to get a couple, let's say you get a couple hundred views. If you throw that exact same video on YouTube, you're probably going to get a couple thousand.
So, like, well, I intend to point people at it through Galaxy 15 anyways, so I don't think it's, you know, all they're going to have to do is click a link. It's not going to matter where it is.
Like, oh, yeah, for sure. Like, if you're relying on sending hits from your own website, but if you're just relying on people stumbling on it from within the system, then, like, YouTube definitely has the advantage there.
Again, though, Swap, if the content people are looking at moves, the viewers will follow.
Oh, yeah.
It will take a while, but...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So...
That's kind of one of those chicken-the-egg issues, though.
Yeah. I just... I don't... It's one of those things where it's like, well, I think I just won't use YouTube if their policy is to let a content company... immediately. I mean, they obviously side with the content company first, and then you have to dispute it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like that. I think you ought to get a letter saying this person's making a claim. Do you want to dispute or, you know, accept it? And then if you accept it, they can put the advertising up. But no, they don't even do that. They immediately side with the person claiming copyright. And mm-hmm. I know they have to. I know the way the laws are, and as many times as they've been sued, that they don't really have a hell of a lot of choice in the matter. But it's like, okay, if you're just going to cripple your service or let these people run roughshod over it, I'm just not going to use it.
Mm,
that's,
right.
I mean, that's the other side of capitalism. If you're running something shitty, I'm just not going to use it. So I'll just go someplace where I don't have to worry about somebody else claiming my content is theirs and, you know, putting freaking pre-rolls and car ads and all this other shit around it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because we've been able to maintain our station pretty much advertising free. The only thing we advertise is our own stuff.
Yeah, and to me, there's no money involved. I don't really consider it advertising. You know, if nobody's actually getting anything out of it, aside from a little bit of PR, that's not really advertising. That's just co-promotion.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Well, we were looking at putting things like Google AdWords on the site, but we just never bothered.
Yeah, and, you know, I think, you know, something like Google AdWords, it's nice, it's unobtrusive, you know, it doesn't really cause any issues for the user. Most of our users probably have AdBlock installed anyways, it's not like it'd be that big of a deal. But
well, I'm not, you know, I go back and forth on it because I'm not sure I actually can. We use a lot of Creative Content's non-commercial music on the station. And the station is obviously non-commercial. It's we do it for fun, but
money.
If we put advertising on there, I don't know though, because you still have things like nonprofits that turn a profit every year, but they're not considered, you know, commercial.
Yeah, and like any money that we get wouldn't actually cover like even the hosting costs.
Well, no, but that would be the idea. Would be to try to break even on the hosting costs, and if did that, I'd be happy. But
you guys don't get paid for doing this? I got sweet end of this deal.
You and I are going to have a conversation after the show, and it's probably going to involve a firearm.
Well, so that's because you made the contract with that demon. I know there's few things you probably should have read first.
Just sign it.
He's going to swallow your soul. Sign it. Anyways. Next story up. This one's from Reuters. And this is just a chance for me to go nuts. Leading cyber experts. I don't know about you guys. Whenever I heard the word cyber, the only thing that comes to mind is, you know, to cyber in a chat room. You know.
Yep.
So this, yeah. You know, cyber this and cyber that is just hilarious for me.
So isn't it like 10,000 hours of experience to be considered an expert? So that's a lot of cyber.
Leading cyber experts warned of a shortage of talented computer security experts in the United States, making it difficult to protect corporate and government networks at a time when attacks are on the rise. Guys, call me. We can fix this easily. It's like, hi there, I'd like to make more money. You can call me now. It's like, you've got a shortage of those, you say. Symantec Corp, I don't think I would use the word expert, but I'm in the field. Symantec Corp.
Okay, I just want to interject there. If you go by the History Channel definition of expert, if you've like read a pamphlet on it, you are an expert now.
Or aliens. Wow.
Aliens. Symantec Corp. Chief Executive Eric Salem told Reuters Media and Technology Summit in New York that his company was working with the U.S. military, other government agencies, and universities to help develop new programs to train security professionals. We don't have enough security professionals, and that's a big issue. What I would tell you is it's going to be a bigger issue from a national security perspective than people realize, he said on Tuesday. Jeff Moss, a prominent hacker or hacking expert who sits on the U.S. Department of Homeland Security Advisory Council, I would question how much of an expert he is if he's sitting there, said that it was difficult to persuade talented people with technical skills to enter the field because it can be a thankless task. Well, that's the damn truth.
Throw money at it.
If you look at security, it's like trying to prove a negative. If you do good security well, nobody comes up and says, good job. You only get called when things go wrong. And that is actually very, very true. The warnings come at a time when security industry is under fire for failing to detect and treat increasingly sophisticated pieces of malware designed for financial fraud and espionage and failing to prevent the theft of valuable data. Moss, who goes by the hacker name Dark Tangent, said that he sees no end of the labor shortage. None of the projections look positive, said Moss, who serves as chief security officer of ICANN, a group that helps run some of the internet's infrastructure. The numbers I've seen look at shortages in the 20,000 to 40,000 for years to come. So, if they're that big of a shortage, how come I'm not making more money?
Like,
guys,
sure.
Call me. Seriously.
Well, you know, like, and, you know, like 20,000 people. Like, I guess that's a decent amount. But maybe you should be shopping around for new jobs.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, yeah. Holy shit. I mean, if you're that concerned about shortages, it's like, you know, I go back and listen to some of the digital dojos. I don't mind to teach. I put the story in here purely because it's like I'm in that field. I am a. What do you mean? There's a shortage. If there's a shortage, I'd be making more money. So
I think the problem is there's a shortage of people that know what the hell they're doing.
that's true of anything.
Yeah, but that's common for every career.
So
true.
And I just like how this guy's you know, they have to put in his handle to make sure he's accredited as a hacker. So yeah. You know, it's this coming from somebody who only goes by handle on a radio show. But in all seriousness, if we're being monitored by somebody who thinks you're having a security professionals, morphs at galaxy15radio.com. Anyways.
Fire DVD.
What'd you say, Swell?
Nothing. I was just making a crack at self-promotion.
Ah, yeah. Hypocrite there, I know. Anyways. Well, hell, if I can't promote myself on my own damn radio show, what can I do?
Oh, no, I fully support self-promotion.
Well, you support self a lot of things there, so, you know.
Zing.
Next story up, this one's from Ars Technica. Netflix has announced it will change both its public application programming interfaces and the terms of service to access them, essentially locking away users' rental history data and preventing them from using third-party applications to export it. At the same time, the company is making it harder for developers to integrate information from Netflix API with data from other services as the company maneuvers to keep its users within its own applications. On October 12th, when Netflix aborted its spinoff of the physical disc rental business under the new Quixtar brand, which who the hell named that? It announced that It announced that the company's public API would continue to support DVD-related features after previously announcing that they would be retired as part of the split. But now Netflix is splitting its disc and streaming catalog databases and dumping much of the metadata that developers had depended on from both the DVDs and the streaming APIs. The functional changes eliminate nearly everything related to the user's viewing history, including rental history, when rented discs were shipped and returned, and when streamed files were watched. Oh, and bookmark information for stream videos paused in progress. So essentially what's happening here is Netflix is, you used to be able to go in the API and get a list of everything you'd rented and everything you'd watched in their API. So there were third-party apps that were doing that, and they're locking all that away. Now, there's only one real reason to do that, and that's because they're going to sell that list to advertisers to build profiling.
Mm-hmm. Imagine that. Mm-hmm. Another way to make money.
Well,
more money, I should say.
Yeah, but, so
you know, I'm actually okay with that because, like, the profile that they're building a profile on what you like to watch, so they can make more of what you like to watch, so they can make more money. I'm okay with them making more of what I like to watch because then I'll have more things that I like to watch.
True, and if that means they start, you know, making new Stargates or something, that'd be awesome. But
No, it wouldn't.
Fair enough.
yeah, they killed that franchise.
Yeah, really, never mind. I forgot about the
that's sad.
That didn't exist. That other show did exist. That wasn't actually a star. Anyways, but it makes you realize anytime you click on, like, if you just click and watch the first 5 minutes of something in the streaming just to see what it is, that goes in the list if you've watched this.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, it's rather interesting, and you know, you don't really think about your Netflix history being logged and recorded somewhere, but it is. So,
oh, I totally think of that because, like, that's what based, like, all of the recommendations on that. Like, that's what the Netflix streaming site is all about, is about what you've watched in the past.
Sure.
And that's, but like, you one don't of the major of features of their streaming service is that they keep track of what you've watched so they can make recommendations based on what you've seen.
Yeah, but the recommendations suck.
All that it looks like it's changing is they're just making it so other people can't really get at it. Now
right,
they just have to pay them.
Right, and that's exactly why. Is they want to sell it to advertisers. Why else would you do that?
But,
oh yeah.
Again, it sounds like before they could have had access to it.
They probably
now
did.
They have to pay for it.
Yeah.
At least it's making it harder for them to get the information.
Yeah, fair point. So yeah. I've really just got that story in there because I'm not sure how many people would have just, you know, would have given it a second thought that Netflix is going to sell what you've watched to advertisers.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I don't look at ads, so I don't care.
I think there you people go. Should expect that whatever they're going to do on the internet is going to be monitored, tracked, and then sold to advertisers because that's just par for
the
course.
That's just how it works. Yep.
So feed them lots of information on stuff you do want to see.
Yeah,
that's
pretty much.
That's how it's supposed to work anyways. So, anyways, next one is from Telegraph, UK Telegraph. The virus Akkad Medra A has stolen tens of thousands of blueprints from companies mostly based in Peru, said ESET, a computer security firm. It targeted software called AutoCAD, which is widely used by industrial designers and architects. The stolen drawings were surreptitiously sent to email accounts provided by two Chinese internet firms. One,
I was
going to
say, China is definitely behind this.
And QQ.com. Although there is no guarantee that the criminals behind the raid were Chinese. It is believed Akkad Medra A was distributed to Peruvian companies via booby-trapped AutoCAD template that was initially sent to public bodies. The virus was first detected some months ago. So they sent it in an AutoCAD template that, you know, people were using to start their projects. The virus was first detected some months ago, but ESET saw a sudden spike in infections 2 months ago as its authors began to exploit their creation. It represents a serious case of industrial espionage, said ESET researcher. Somebody help me with that name. Rockard Zennewig. Zennerberg.
Zennerberg.
I'm American. I'm sorry.
Make your names English.
Americanize your name so I can read them in your damn stories. So, Richard Bob here.
go ahead.
Every new design is automatically sent to the operator of the malware. Needless to say, this can cost the legitimate owner of the intellectual property a lot of money, as the cyber criminals have access to the designs before they even go into production. So yeah, all the Chinese knockoffs. How do you think they were getting them?
Now, to be fair, like I working in this industry, I think PSV pretty much does too, and you'll probably agree with me. Any decent sized company, maybe 100 people, they're gonna already have their own templates. They're not gonna be going to some random website and downloading a free template. The only people who are going to be doing that is going to be like somebody who's like one or two people in the company, sort of thing. You know, somebody who's just getting started out.
I don't know. We're making it out like they've got a ton of these already.
Well, yeah, they probably have. But like even a small company where you've got like just a couple of people, they're already going to have like probably thousands of drawings in their system because, you know, like every nut and bolt has its own drawing. So it's like they say,
A single machine can even a simple thing can have thousands of drawings in itself.
Like the company I work for probably has, let's say, 12 different products, and we're up to hundreds of thousands of drawings.
Yeah.
So like it's not as much as you'd think.
Okay, fair enough.
My company, we're in the millions.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I just, you know, I thought that was interesting.
And it is. Because, like, the people who, like, this wouldn't really hurt the really large companies because it's not going to hurt them as much. But, you know, when you're, like, just getting started out and you've, let's say, got a brand new product that you're trying to, you know, get a foothold in the market, and before you even have it in production, it's already coming out of China at, like, 3/4 the price that you can do it in your own local country, that's going to destroy your company.
Oh yeah.
And you know, this is not good at all.
And also the big companies would be able to fight stuff like this. Small ones, what would they be able to do if it's happening in a completely different country that they
Go ahead, BC.
Well, that was pretty much it.
Okay. Well, this is a great argument for installing a data loss prevention system in your network. And if your company, like if losing a couple of CAD drawings is a game over scenario for your company, then you maybe not just not let CAD drawings be emailed. Period. Hmm. I mean,
well,
makes sense.
Yeah, you could just put a block on your
emails bigger than so much.
Well, no, just disallow the attachment type.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's simple things like that. Now, sure, if you got somebody sitting there actively trying to get stuff out, it's like, oh, well, they've blocked the attachment. Great, I'll put it in a zip file. But that kind of shit is what breaks scripts and viruses like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you still have to start looking at the actual content of it and ensuring that, you know. Yeah, I'm sure there's got to be a way you can still identify a CAD drawing, even if it's zipped or, you know, have other things done to try and modify it.
Also, why are you emailing anything to China? That's another, you know, just like, ooh, yeah, why is this going to China? Exactly. That's, you know.
Do we have a company in China?
Well, and like, really, the computer systems that you're actually doing the drawings on don't really need internet access. You know, like, it makes things more convenient, but really, like most situations, you're working on a local network, and like there's not any reason. Like the only reason you're on a local network is because all the drawings are stored on a local server. But that could be on an isolated system that's not online, and there could be like one computer in the department that's online that
has
you can
AutoCAD
actually use
gone,
for sending stuff out.
Yeah, has AutoCAD gone to the online registration system that you see a lot of professional software doing these days?
I don't know.
Has to hit their servers to register to activate.
I've never actually used AutoCAD. I've used SolidWorks and Pro Engineer.
Yeah, I don't use CAD. Well, I used to use it, but not in my current job. But From what I know of how the licensing works, it doesn't have to contact outside, more of just a local network.
Yeah, they usually send license. You like special files they that you file. Install okay. on your local server.
But I know AutoCAD is crazy about their licensing. Like, oh, I think this is the same company that sued people for reselling old AutoCAD licenses on eBay.
Oh, I believe it.
So yeah. But, I know that they're insane about that. And you see a lot of professional... See, I've been exploring music software lately, and a lot of music software has to check in with their server before it let you do anything.
I believe it.
So, I mean, VSTs, everything.
Right. That's slightly off topic. Do you guys at where you work at all that, do you know what like code knows storage requirements and stuff like that are on the back end? I mean, if you're talking about thousands or millions of drawings in BSV's case, I mean, there's got to be something hefty on the back end, I assume, presenting all that storage.
Oh, yeah. Like you generally have like a server room.
Yeah, they've got a nice huge-ass SAN.
Like, I can't tell you exactly what's running, but, you know, like a company where they've got like 8 engineers, they had like multiple racks of multiple servers running.
They probably got those nice large, you know, RAID rack arrays that you use to build SANs and
oh yeah,
and you know, use like VMware sure clustering and shit like that.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if you guys knew exactly like EMC NetApp kind of storage.
Okay, Suave, here's what I want you to do. I want you to go talk to your server admin and tell him you want to walk in the data center and just take a picture of the storage array to show to some of your friends online so that they'll believe you on how big it is and see if they let you do it.
That would be awesome.
Because the correct answer is, are you high? But
the problem with this is the tech admin at my company is also the brother of the owner of the company. So, like, I feel like I don't want to get on his bad side at all.
Probably not.
VSV, you sound like you've got a bigger company. You see if you can pull that off.
Yeah, I think that may take an out-of-state trip.
Road trip!
And I have no clue where it is.
Email one of your data center guys and ask him to send you a picture back of the sand just because you're curious as to what it is.
Yeah. We have this cool application we want you to run. It's called Wireshark. And then
we're going to sit here and capture my job.
Oh, open. Okay, I want you to open your web browser and go to this IP address, and it's going to ask if you want to let this unsigned Java applet run. Just click yes.
There you go.
Go to the machine and read me the number on top of the box. It allows my computer to talk to that computer.
Oh, God, I haven't seen that movie in forever. That movie was terrible, but
which one was that?
Had Tid in it. Hackers.
Oh, okay. I don't remember that specific line. But that was a great movie.
Yeah, that's where he called up the guy at the TV place and Norm.
Okay.
The guard's name was Norm, and he pretended to be an executive and got him to read the modem number to him.
Acid burn.
Oh God.
Zero cool.
That was such a badass movie.
It really was. It had absolutely nothing to do with computers, but it was an awesome movie.
Nice.
It was just a special effects show, right?
Yeah, because hacking really involves flying around in 3D interfaces and watching crap fly by in badly rendered screens.
And downloading garbage files. No, it was mostly, the cool part about the movie was all the social engineering, I think, that did.
Oh,
that's
true.
Older, you know, diving. Auto, yeah, I mean, the auto dialing, war diving, and all that stuff.
And, you know,
they
like,
did.
Hacking the streetlights, actually way easier than they made it out to look.
Yeah.
You don't need any central servers for that.
No. Well, it depends on how the city's got them rigged up. Some you don't, some you do.
Yeah.
I've taken care of the streetlights around my house with a DVD burner laser. So.
Yeah, I bet, hey.
Do you want to be a
mint
to this?
Actually, it's a Blu-ray burner laser, and I've got it housed in a flashlight body. And
nice.
Yeah, you hit the little sensor on the top of the things, they go out.
Nice.
Actually, you just get the laser near the sensor, they go out. So, you know.
That should be a digital dojo sometime, dude.
Building a laser?
Yeah.
I've
tried, and I have failed miserably, so...
It's not that...
I think laser diodes are extremely sensitive.
Yeah.
Oh, if you exactly. have the wrong I was just gonna say, going gotcha. In at all.
Yeah,
then
I think
you're
I burnt it out when I was trying to solder it into the heat sink casing that I had for it.
Yeah,
you I put too much heat to it.
And
burnt
you don't
it out.
Solder it.
Yeah.
And
you
that's
put a little
what
bit of thermal grease on it and you tap it into the housing. It should be a snug fit.
Yeah, they're really sensitive. That's the hard part. I've actually done the exact same thing, and I've also completely fried the diode.
Really? Because I've pulled it off twice without a hitch.
Yep. All right, next week, lasers.
Lasers.
Freaking lasers. You're going to have to queue up some sound effects for that.
Lasers.
Yeah, freaking lasers every 2 seconds in that segment.
We'll just go clip some shit out of Star Wars.
We'll say BSV's name. And then,
hang on. If we're going to do that joke, hang on. Stall while I find the damn sound clip.
Lasers are cool. They're different colors. Maybe we can even make a lightsaber.
Oh, that's the stuff.
And soon, BSV just will carve BSV into the face of the moon.
what was the bad guy on The Tick who did that? We were doing a show here, weren't we?
I don't know.
Let's see.
Yeah.
I think I derailed everything.
This one's from Daily Tech, and it's an America fuck yeah story. This is fun. The U.S. Federal Commission The U.S. Federal Communications Commission and its enforcement of anti-obscenity laws have long been a thorny irritation to colorful media figures like Detroit rapper Eminem, who famously sang the "So the FCC won't let me." Or let me... Okay, so they got the rest of this thing. But anyways, today, the U.S. Supreme Court released a ruling that significantly scales back the FCC's censorship authority. In the case, Federal Communications Commission's et al. Versus Fox Television... Of course it was Fox. the Horace Courtland Land refused to assess the constitutionality of U.S. federal law that prohibits broadcasted obscenities. However, it did deal the FCC... efforts a blow by finding it illegal for the FCC to fine TV broadcasters who air obscenity or nudity during daytime hours. The ban on TV profanity is as old as broadcast television itself, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, so the Supreme Court said that it's not legal for the FCC to fine somebody because they show tits on TV.
That's hilarious. How are they supposed to stop them then? Money is the only thing that hurts them.
Well, it's a free speech issue if you ask me, but I mean,
yeah. It makes sense, but that's funny, huh?
So, I fully expect to start watching TV again because I think it's about to get a lot more interesting.
All right.
Excellent.
So, yeah, if they can't fine you, well, no, never mind. I was going to say, did they accidentally just make a whole bunch of pirate radio stations legal? But no, I don't think they did. I think you still need a license to broadcast. Yeah. They just can't tell you what's obscene.
That's the big problem with pirate radio stations is just using a transmitter. Fuck, you can't even use a decent FM transmitter for your car anymore because of that shit.
Yeah, which, if you're using a frequency that's not paid for and doesn't interfere with one that's paid for, what's the deal?
Yeah.
If you're using one that's not interfering, they haven't sold it yet. So that's where that comes from, is they want to actually sell you the rights to use the airwaves. So last one here is from SE Magazine. A German pen tester has posted to Google Store an Android application capable of siphoning credit card data from contactless bank cards. The app, dubbed Pay Card Reader, will skim card numbers and expiration dates along with transactions and merchandise IDs, and was successfully tested against a German PayPass MasterCard. The developer, Thomas Skora, a senior consultant for Intelligrass, somebody help me with that. Integralis? Said that
sure.
Also... Yeah, I don't know. German word. Also worked with Germany's popular Gilt Card. The app requires an NFC-enabled near-field communication handset or the users to attach a near-field communication transmitter to their Android phone. So it'll take an external one if you want to build one that's more powerful than the one built into your phone. Sorka said the app was only for a technical demonstration to demonstrate how data could be siphoned from contactless cards. The pay card reader was launched at Integra's Security World 12 in Germany and was considered still unstable. It's available for download on the Google Pay. Okay, they've actually pulled it from the Google Store, but it's still on GitHub. So I'll have a link in the show notes where you can go get this thing. Contactless cards have previously been proven hackable by security researchers, so it's actually nothing new. So if you have one of those RFID credit cards, I would recommend putting some aluminum foil in your wallet.
Also, this is essentially just near-field communications.
Yeah, it's exactly what it is.
Can't you also use this to skim the information? Like, people are now starting to use their phones for doing payments and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
It could just steal that information as well. It's not just the credit cards.
No, but that's what that's what this particular application does. Somebody's already wrote it for you. The code's on GitHub.
Right. I was reading about it, and I could have sworn they were talking about pretty much everything that uses near field. It's not just credit cards.
Well,
I could be wrong.
Well, I thought the application that they wrote was specifically to this kind of credit card so they could do the demo. But, I mean, it certainly proves that you could write the application to pull whatever you wanted.
Right.
So maybe it'll still log it even if it's not the format it's expecting it in.
Right.
Because they were doing this as proof of concept. But I just like how, you can hook an external one up to your phone. So you can build one with a giant-ass antenna and a booster on it so you could just get everybody's credit card in a, area. So
looks like I have a new project for this weekend.
Well, I can just see him walking around with your phone with this line going to your backpack. It's like, what are you doing? Never paying a bill again.
Yes.
You want to pay my gas bill, right? Thank you.
Anyway, so that's out there. So if you have any of these near field communication bank cards, you probably ought to put some aluminum foil in your wallet, and kind of guard the card whenever you tap it.
And put some on your head too while you're at it.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking about RFID here, right?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
I mean, yeah. I was just like, I haven't heard it referred to as near field communications or whatever, but...
They're calling it for cell phones.
They changed the name because RFID got a bad reputation as being easy to hack.
Yeah,
I wonder why.
I was going to say, there's a ton. I mean, I know my security badge for work is an RFID tag, so there's a lot more than just credit cards out there.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And actually, those badges you used to get in the door at work, I'm willing to bet that's a prox card of one format or another. You can actually take one of those readers, hook it up to an Arduino, and read the information off of it, no problem.
Wouldn't surprise me.
I've done
it. Put it in your backpack, walk around.
I didn't do that. I was actually trying to figure out the format another card was in, see if we could get it to work in our system. But yeah, I totally rigged one of those up to a laptop at work just so I could see what was on a card.
Yeah.
So there's four lines that matter. Two of them, one is ground, one is voltage, the other two are your data. It's not difficult to figure out.
Right.
Anyways.
And it's all Quotex. I mean, it's not encryption, right?
Oh, yeah, no, it's a serial number. Yeah, it's a serial number and a couple of checksum bits. So,
yeah.
I assume these are some similar. I mean, well, that's most of what your credit card is.
Me love you a long time.
So, what I have for Digital Dojo tonight is not actually a technical anything. It's just something that comes up a lot, which is the old operating system argument. And this came up recently because I decided earlier this week to try and Hackintosh my laptop. Now, I'm going to flat out state this did not end up working very well. I got everything with the Wi-Fi working on OS X 10.7, and it was actually a fairly legitimate copy of OS X 10.7 because I do have other, I've got some Macs floating around here. But I thought it might run smoother than Windows 7 because the hardware is getting a little bit older and OS X is a little bit lighter. But it was never very stable. And when I was talking to some people about what I was trying to pull off, the most asked question was, why are you bothering?
And thing I said when you mentioned it, Warps?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we make fun of Mac all the time, but I'll flat out say, when I make fun of Macs, I'm not actually making fun of the hardware or, for the most part, the software. I don't like some of their design decisions, but they make nice hardware. I'm making fun of this cult that's come up around their stuff. Because I've actually had people have emotional reactions when I showed them a Hackintosh laptop. So,
yeah.
Like, speaking of which, did you guys know that Steve Jobs actually refused medical treatment for his cancer and instead opted for a vegan diet and acupuncture?
Yeah, how
well that's pretty much why he died when he died, because he was kind of a dumbass.
Gonna say, yeah, how'd that work for you?
But I've actually Hackintosh before on an older compact. The only problem I had besides the Wi-Fi not working was some kind of processor acceleration. So if I tried to open up WordPad or Terminal and type, I could type out a full paragraph, go get something to eat, come back, and it'd still be rendering on the screen.
Nice.
Oh, that's
yeah,
productive.
It's pretty. It's now I've done my share of Hackintoshing, and it's pretty specific. If you're using a processor that's not really like an Intel, it's not an Intel processor that's normally in an official Apple piece of kit, you've got to use a hacked kernel. And they add the extensions to make it work with, like, if your machine doesn't have SSE3 or whatever.
That's what I was missing.
Yeah. I've actually used an AMD chip before. I've got a little machine that actually ran OS X better than some Intel machines because the hacked kernels were better. But it's horribly. The thing is, you know, once you do that, you know, the machine's going to get out of date quick because you can't run updates because you'll break it. And but I was hoping to get Hugo on tonight because he's done a lot of Hackintoshing. But yeah, so anyways, though, I guess just to point this out, because the argument comes up a lot. I mean, a lot of people have convinced themselves that their operating system or choice of computing platform is some kind of religion. I mean, it's actually called the cult of the Mac, and people aren't even kidding. And, you know, Linux users do the same thing. But
yeah.
Hell, I've does even seen a couple of rabid Windows apologists. So
does that mean Apple could file for to become a religion?
I think they could.
If piracy can become a religion, I'm sure Appleism could become a religion.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But you know, people start taking these things up as like, I don't know, some kind of aspect of their personal identity of what computer they use. And it's like, mm-hmm. It's a fucking tool. You pick the best one for the job. And, you know, I've always kind of felt that if you're building a client system, you want to play games and you don't want much fudge, you know, you use a Windows box. If you want to do, you know, your graphic design work, you're doing a lot of audio work, or you need a very specific piece of software, you know, a lot of people like OS X for that. And then if you're building a kick-ass server, Linux is the way to go. But either you can make any of them do anything. It's just how much work you want to put into it.
Don't rely on one tool. Pick the best tool for the job.
Thank you. Go ahead, Big.
I've never really understood the whole use Macintosh for audio editing or video or graphics processing. The same tools work in Windows. So
that wasn't always true, actually.
True, it wasn't always, but it is now. And people still say that Mac is better somehow, but it's the same hardware now, and you can get the same or close to the same applications on Windows.
Yeah, no, you can. I totally agree with you. I mean, like I said, I was just doing it to try it out. I was just going to see. And honestly, it's because I've been, like I was saying earlier, I've been getting into audio production. And every time you go look up any, you know, any documentation, any tutorials, anything on doing stuff with the software, all the screenshots and all the instructions are for Macs. So it's like, well, maybe there's something to that. So let's try it out. Well, I never got the damn thing to run, so I'm not going to know. But, you know, it's just one of those things where, you know, it's legacy for one thing. Pentium 1, Pentium 2 era when the Macs were all running power PCs, they really were better for it because they were a little bit better optimized for doing that kind of work. And you have a lot of people who, you know, I guess you'd say grew up or learned doing that kind of work on the Mac system. So they think that, you know, you got to kind of stick with that.
Yeah,
and OS X is lighter than Windows 7. There's less in it. So it does run quicker.
I don't know. I think you were onto something when you said it's becoming, computers are becoming more mainstream. A lot of people are using them more, so you're right. They're they're starting to become part of people's identity. They're becoming, you know, associated with that. And then, of course, just like with anything, there's stereotypes that are associated with those too. You know, you're a Mac person, okay. So like you said, maybe you like doing graphics card, you like doing you know, audio and things like that. Okay, so you're Windows. Oh, so you're a gamer. You do nothing but play games on it. Oh, okay, so you like running Linux. You must tweak everything. Oh, you're a hacker, you know. There's all that stereotype stuff that goes along with it. But, like I said, pick the right tool for the job. But I don't know. I mean, and for me too, I have my own personal bias. Like, I would never touch a Mac, but that's not because I haven't, you know, played with them or experienced them and stuff like that. It's just that I don't like Apple as a company. I don't like their theories about the Mac Store and limiting what kind of applications and all that crap. I don't like them as a company. That's why I choose not to use Mac. Sure. And that's why I make fun of them a lot.
Well, I've never bought one from Apple. I always get them secondhand. So, if that matters. But. You know, yeah, no, it's totally, you know, it's a personal choice. And again, it just comes down to what do you think does the job better? And a part of that is what you know how to do. If you know how to do something on a Windows box and you don't know how to do it in Linux or a Mac or BSD, you know, pick your operating system that, you know, for whatever reason you think is better. If the person trying to get something done doesn't know how to do it in the other operating system, well, you might argue, oh, well, you should learn. Well, maybe. But if it's something, you know, they got to get it done, they got to get it done now, the better operating system is the one they can use. So.
Yeah, it makes sense. Yeah.
You know.
I'm stroking my neck beard right now.
Oh, hell. Why do I get the feeling you went out and glued a neck beard on just for this conversation?
I have a goatee, so that counts.
That counts?
Well, as long as he hasn't been playing with Nao again.
Oh. So, no. I mean, there's not really much to point out here other than it's kind of silly to flame people on forums saying, oh, you should be using this, you should be using that. It's like, no, pick what works.
It's the same thing, dude, with religions, like you said. All right, so you got all these different religions. Oh, my religion's best. Yours sucks. No, yours sucks. Mine's the best.
But my religion is the best.
Well, fuck you.
Oh, hell. So, that's. Wow, we ended up not being as short a show as I was expecting. So, let's see. Did anybody else have anything they wanted to throw in there?
No.
No? Okay. Outstanding. There we go. All right. So, of course, listen to the stream. We're always updating it, we're always looking for new music to add. And, Sard's. Sard, have you been back in the box here lately to do anything on it? Or I know you've been really busy.
I've been really busy, dude. I haven't done shit, unfortunately. Yeah.
So, you know, get sending us new music so Sard has something to work with. So, you know, to make him feel even more busy because we want him to have, you know, stress issues. Of course, Pure Decking every Thursday. Shoot the Noise on Wednesdays with BSV took that show over. No, BSV, Big Brother took that show over. BSV, you've been promoted. No!
Is that show just they spin a wheel and whoever's name it lands on is host now or something?
No, I think Big took that show over full time.
Yep.
Yeah. But I was just confused that I was somehow the host for a moment there.
I'm drunk. Anyways, so actually, speaking of BSV shows, that would be Nameless Review 7, which I think they're trying to do on Saturdays, but I still have Whenever in my notes here.
Currently, bi-weekly Saturdays. I need to once get the ball rolling. Hopefully, I'll get it back up to weekly.
So, and of course, the Galaxy 15 radio site and the Twitter handle. Use the feedback forum and the shout box. We like, you know, knowing that we're not just screaming at the internet here. So, not that that would stop us, but you know, we're doing it.
You mean
anyways.
People will listen to us?
Apparently,
I didn't sign up for that.
Apparently. So, anyways, that's pretty much all I got, unless anybody wants to throw anything up before I hit the play button on here on this music.
Bye!
We'll be right back.